What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. My name is Herms. I am the one who talks first, joined, as always, by the incomparable Tyler Rowe. And today, we are going to continue our talk about the large ripple effects of 2026 NFL free agency. We're getting a lot of different players going to new teams, and of course, that is going to affect the environment that these players are walking into. Which incumbent players are perhaps being helped by some of the moves that their teams are making, and which guys are going to be maybe at a bit of a deficit, maybe more in the quote losers column. And I don't know about you, but I think the best place to start is in Minnesota with the Vikings, because one of the big moves in terms of the quarterback position that went down that did not happen when we recorded our last episode was Kyler Murray signing a one-year contract to go in and compete with J.J. McCarthy. I think anybody who watched the NFL last year, specifically Vikings games, knows that it did not go very well for J.J. I have some stats that we can talk about, but I first want to turn it over to you, Tyler. How do you feel about this signing and what it could possibly mean for the Vikings in general?
This is great news for the Vikings. I mean, Kyler's not cooked, man. You can sit here and you can talk about Kyler's maybe love of the game, his dedication, his study habits. I totally understand that. But the fact of the matter remains, when Kyler Murray plays a full season without injury, he's been a top 12 quarterback almost every single year that he's played. All right. The only reason he's not a top 12 quarterback is because he gets hurt. It's pretty simple at this point in time. Yes, maybe we've been too high on him, calling him a top 10 quarterback every single year. But at the same time, I look at who he is, what he can do. He can still run. He can still throw pretty well. He's a great athlete. And this is just one of those cases where it's a great landing spot. Now, I know we've all kind of clung to this. You know, whatever quarterback on the Vikings is going to succeed, right? It saved Darnold's career. Guy goes, wins a Super Bowl afterwards, right? He made Nick Mullins look competent. He made Josh Dobbs look competent. And then this was supposed to be the same thing for J.J. McCarthy. Didn't happen. Good thing I was on the right side of history, as J.J. McCarthy is simply just not an NFL quarterback. But I still believe in the system that brought Nick Mullins, the system that brought Josh Dobbs success, made them look good, made Darnold into another starting quarterback, saved his career. So this is great, man. I'm in on Kyler Murray. I would be buying Kyler Murray in Superflex for a first-round pick. No questions asked. And more importantly, it's the pieces here. I mean, J.J. Imagine how bad you are at quarterback for Justin Jefferson to be dead. That's what it was like with J.J. McCarthy, man. And now Justin Jefferson is back. J.J. McCarthy's on the bench. Kyler's starting. So this is just great for everybody involved. Addison was completely off our radar with J.J.M. He's back in consideration. Hawk wasn't even a consideration. Well, I'm probably still not drafting him. I think he's probably rosterable, maybe streamable probably going forward. The whole offense gets just a massive uplift by getting a competent quarterback here in Kyler Murray. So, and I believe they're not really paying him very much. I think it's like pretty much like the minimum here. So it's not like he's eating up all this cap space. The Vikings can still go out there and do well. I mean, this is a perfect scenario for the Vikings. They get to give him a shot, and it's a perfect scenario for Kyler, because if he does well, he'll get a massive contract next year. This is just all boats rise with the tide here. I'm thrilled for Kyler. I'm thrilled for the Vikings. The only thing that isn't great about this is the fact that I'm a Lions fan and now we got to play him twice a year.
That is certainly going to be tough. I'm really excited for this Vikings team, and especially because of the fact that, kind of like you said, it brings Justin Jefferson back into being the mega producer, at least in theory, that we had been accustomed to seeing in seasons past. And I also think that this is a good opportunity to remind dynasty managers out there that when you are frustrated by a pass catcher that has a frustrating quarterback, those situations don't last forever. I know that there are a lot of people who had Justin Jefferson at lower dynasty values. He was a little bit more acquirable in recent months than he had been at any point prior to this in his career. If you're just patient, some things do eventually pay off. I think that's a really important thing there. It's going to be really fun to see how this team works out. But beyond that, it's not just the Vikings that have some winners from the recent free agent moves. There are a lot of running back situations that also improved, and a couple of star players at the very tippy top that we were already very thrilled about that are probably going to be even better. I know you had mentioned Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs, a couple names you wanted to dig into, but if there's one place in specific you want to start with those guys, lay it on me.
I think we can talk about Bijan and Gibbs pretty much at the same time because it's the same result. So basically, Gibbs and Bijan, you know, in the 2025 season and before that, 2024 even, we know they're elite backs. We know these are the best running backs in the NFL. However, their workload was a little bit hampered by, you know, above average running back play in David Montgomery and Tyler Allgeier, respectfully. Those are good running backs. In fact, they're so good, they got signed, like traded for and signed to other teams. And they're probably going to get pretty good run there as well. But what this does is, even though they're elite, we still want to see like a 70+, 75+ percent snap share out of our bell cow backs. If we're going to be taking a running back, you know, in the first couple picks, you don't want it to be a guy that's leading a committee. You want it to be a guy who is a true bell cow. And what has been stopping Gibbs from being a bell cow has been David Montgomery. And what has been stopping Bijan from being a bell cow is Tyler Allgeier. Now we see Montgomery gone. Now we see Allgeier gone. And neither one of these teams really did much to address the position in free agency. In fact, I think Pacheco signing for Detroit makes me even more interested, as I mentioned in the last podcast. So for me, yes, they could hit somebody in the draft. I highly doubt either one of these teams are taking a running back early. Yes, they probably could take a depth pick. That makes sense. But what this signals to me is Bijan and Gibbs are clear winners here. Not that they weren't already going to take them at the top of your drafts, but now it feels even better to just go 1-2 ahead of any wide receiver, in my opinion, because they're both in line to get serious work on good offenses. And in my mind, they're in line to get more work than we've ever seen them get before. And that, Herms, has me excited.
Yeah, dude. And on top of that, especially when it comes to Bijan specifically, it's not just the departure of Allgeier, but one of the things that we've talked about in past episodes, bringing in Kevin Stefanski as the head coach. That offense is going to be very fun. It's a very run-heavy system. They've always been very successful with that. I think it's going to pay massive dividends for Bijan. I think both guys are well within the conversation of potentially being the RB1 in fantasy for 2026. If you had to pick one just between the two of them now, though, who do you give the edge to between Bijan and Jahmyr Gibbs?
You know, my heart wants to pick Gibbs because he's just that much fun and I'm a Lions fan, but I really think I'd go Bijan just based upon, first of all, just like how he's built. He's built to really carry a little bit more of a workload than Gibbs is. He has the same kind of explosion. I mean, frankly, I think Bijan might be a little bit better, more of a talented pass catcher. I think Bijan might be a little bit more talented between the tackles. I mean, Gibbs has definitely got him in terms of that kind of like you know, get to the edge, breakaway speed. I mean, we're comparing, in my mind, like the two best running backs in the NFL, so it's tough. But I would likely give the edge to Bijan, as I would feel better about Bijan getting a CMC-style workload before Gibbs did. Right. So again, splitting hairs, but we like, to me, the gold standard is like CMC. CMC is like a 90+, 85% plus percentage running back who gets all the goal line, gets all the receiving work, and gets pretty much just all the work in general. Right. They're just not taking him off the field. Bijan and Gibbs have traditionally gone off the field at times. I think Bijan is a player who I would probably see their team giving or trusting more to have that kind of workload and maybe doing a little bit more with it. But again, it's 1A, 1B more than one before the other.
Yeah, both going to be excellent picks, both in very positive backfield situations, which may not be as true for one of the ones that I wanted to highlight very quickly. We talk about the Washington Commanders and what they've done so far this offseason. I think from a real life standpoint, they've done a great job building things on the defense, but that's not really what this podcast is about. I have some questions about their running back room, especially after they went out there and signed Rashad White to a one-year, $2 million deal, and then also brought in Jerome Ford on a one-year term as well. It's going to be a little bit more crowded than it was last year, and I think I worry a little bit for the ripple effects specifically for Jacory Crosky-Merritt, because we look at the Washington offense last year, and they did not get a ton done through the air out of the backfield, throwing to these running backs, getting a lot of that pass catching involved. It wasn't the thing after Austin Eckler popped his Achilles in week 2. It was a pretty gross state of affairs. So just for context, I did a little bit of research. Jeremy McNichols led the Washington running backs with 25 receptions. To give you an idea of how not great that is, Michael Carter led the Cardinals with 33. Justice Hill had 22 for the Ravens, and Aaron Jones had 28 receptions in just 12 games. So, like, we're talking kind of bottom of the barrel type stuff. I do think that bringing in especially somebody like Rashad White means that he's going to be out there a lot. It's not a ton of money, but he is so far in his career averaged 58 targets and 52 receptions per year. And Crosky Merritt himself only exceeded 50% of snaps in 4 games last season. So that's just one of the things that I wanted to throw out there. It's definitely not the last time we're going to talk about the Commanders on this podcast, because they got some other fun stuff going on elsewhere. But just in terms of that backfield, looking at Bill, do we feel good about it? Are the Commanders done adding to this running back room? Because I'm not entirely sure that they are.
Yeah, I mean, this might be a little bit of big brain time here for me, but it's easy to just on the surface sit here and say, you know, JCM, Rashad White, winners, right? These are the clear guys. JCM, he's an early down running back. He's going to get that work. Rashad White, pass catching specialist, can pass block, going to get that work. Jerome Ford kind of seems like a fit in, just kind of third back that can fit in where he needs to. And I think you could trot that out if you're the Commanders. Like, that's usable, but you can't be serious. You have Jaden Daniels on a rookie contract, man. You just lost a season to injury. Terry McLaurin's not getting any younger. Like, you got to start pushing. I mean, they're 2 years away from doing well in the playoffs. They knocked the Lions out. I mean, this is a good team. And last year, things did not go their way. So I do not see this as a team that can just be like, all right, let's build things up. I'm taking the approach as, you know, this is a loss. Like, I'm not viewing this running back room as a complete running back room. I'm viewing this as we have, you know, committee guys and some depth. And I'll come up with my NFL mock here for FTN, I believe, next week or the week after. Okay. I might be not mocking Jeremiah Love to the Commanders at 7. I think that is something that I'm looking to do. Obviously, the Giants and the Titans are in play at 4-5, in my opinion. But, man, I don't see this as a winner. I would be trying to get rid of JCM and Rashad White, as I think they're going to be looking to add through the draft early a running back, because this is just not a room with enough talent. I mean, look at Rashad White's contract. 1 year, $2 million is like the minimum, man. Like, just to read off some... Chris Rodriguez, 2 years, $10 million. Keaton Mitchell, 2 years, $9.25 million. I mean, this is like Emmanuel Wilson money here for Rashad White. It does not signal a guy that's going to be getting a serious workload. The NFL has decided that Rashad White is just not getting that kind of money. So for me, it's easy on the surface to say this is a win for this running back room. They're set. They're going to look forward to the season. Man, I think they're going to be adding a running back early, and it's going to be too late if you're holding on to the bag to get rid of these middling running backs.
I agree. I'm definitely a little bit nervous about, you know, to your point, Rashad White's lack of financials. One of the things that I had done for the site recently, I came out with an article looking back at the past 5 years of recent NFL free agent history and kind of looking at the different contracts, what it could all mean and stuff. And for running backs, you really do want them to sign for as close to about at least maybe like $5 million average annual value. Typically closer to 7 is a good signal for a guy that's going to be used a lot. And White not getting there, I don't know. He at least fits the archetype and the specific skill set of what they were lacking. So there could be something there. But like you said, not a team that's going to be done adding. But one of the names that is not going to come back to this team, you brought him up already, Chris Rodriguez Jr., signed elsewhere, going down to Jacksonville to presumably take over some of the workload there for the departed Travis Etienne. How you feeling about Chris Rodriguez? How you feeling about this Jags backfield? I know this is one you definitely wanted to touch on.
Yeah, man. I mean, on the surface, I saw it and didn't think about anything. So I was like, all right, whatever. Like, you know, they got Bashel Tootin. We know Liam Cohen likes Bashel Tootin. You know, Laquan Allen's whatever. I don't think he's going to be too much of a stretch. So I was like, okay, they got Chris Rodriguez. He's probably going to contend and back up Bashel Tootin. And then I kind of looked at the things. First of all, like, good con. You know, two 2 years, $10 million contract. It's not far off from what Tyler Allgeier and Rico Dowdle got paid, which we talked about them being a committee back. All right. Second piece here. This was brought to my attention a little bit further on. Liam Cohen was a coach at Kentucky, the offensive coordinator, when Chris Rodriguez played at Kentucky. In fact, Rodriguez had almost 1,400 rush yards. He had, I think, just a little over 6 yards per attempt and 9 touchdowns the year that Cohen was the offensive coordinator. They know each other, right? They're buddies. They like each other. There's plenty of quotes out there about Liam Cohen talking about how much he likes the way Chris Rodriguez plays ball. He signed a guy that he knows can get it done on the early downs. And that, for me, has Bashel Tootin as a little bit of a loser here. So my approach, and I'll admit it, that's kind of been like, you know, Bashel Tootin's like a good buy. Like, I think he's going to be that guy. And on the surface, I saw the Chris Rodriguez signing, and I was like, all right, Bashel Tootin to the moon. And I started sitting on it, and I'm like, it would not surprise me just due to the relationship and the fact that Chris Rodriguez looked halfway decent last year, if we're being honest, that he's going to be like maybe on the better side of the committee with Bashel Tootin. I don't think this is locked in Bashel Tootin's backfield. I think Chris Rodriguez is going to continue to get some play here. So I would say this Chris Rodriguez signing is a winner for him, but frankly, I'm starting to think of it as a lose for Bashel Tootin, and I don't think people are looking at it that way right now.
I tend to agree. I think it's definitely, well, I mean, it's not good news for Bashel Tootin. Anytime you're going to go out and pay a running back that much money, of course it's going to have some sort of effect on the shape of the workload distribution. But one of the things I did want to ask you about on this subject, because I've seen a little bit of chatter out there in some of the fantasy streets, is LaQuint Allen at all a threat to you when it comes to this stuff? Because I've seen arguments made. It's like, well, he was a pass catcher at Syracuse. He could be pretty good. But like the one thing that I specifically want to note to our listeners is that having gone down to see Bashel Tootin the year that he was at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, I watched him run all of those receiving drills in practice. He was one of the best guys there. He has really good hands, and especially his movement with his hips and being able to just, you know, kind of turn and really get going. He's pretty strong at that. I don't think it's necessarily going to be dire for him now that things are going to be, you know, changing a little bit. But do you give any credence to the idea that LaQuint Allen, who, again, mind you, was like a kick returner, like a return specialist for this team last year? Are you worried? Do we have to care about him at all?
No, I think he's a fine, like, dynasty stash, like, just have him sitting there. But, yeah, I mean, I expect this to be, like, a Chris Rodriguez, Bashel. I mean, Bashel Tootin's going to have every opportunity to take the passing role here, and I hope he does. It's probably his path of least resistance to the field, because Chris Rodriguez certainly doesn't catch any balls, man. I was looking at it, like, months ago when we were talking about him. I'm like, this dude, like, would go games without catching a football. So he's no worries for Chris Rodriguez catching the ball. I mean, that role can be Bashel Tootin's. I mean, I don't think he's useless. But, yeah, I mean, I think there was some excitement and positivity around Bashel Tootin becoming the lead running back, and I'm pumping the brakes on that a little bit.
Definitely makes sense to do so. Are there any other winners that you want to touch on before we hop into our first commercial break?
I think just briefly, I do think like Michael Wilson is a bit of a winner here. Like we talked about it about a month ago. Like we didn't really know what to do with him because like he didn't really do a lot in his career, and then all of a sudden kind of broke out. Marv was hurt during that time, but he also looked really damn good. I think them signing Kendrick Bourne kind of signals, hey, we're going to move forward to this pass catching room of Marv, Michael Wilson, and then obviously Trey McBride, but then probably Kendrick Bourne is the three. The Cardinals pick at the third spot this year. They're not taking a wide receiver there. They have a lot more holes to fill at this point in time. So I'd like to think that Michael Wilson's role here is, you know, pretty safe. And you know, as a guy that I was had some questions on, if he does, in fact, survive the draft and there's no really interesting wide receivers there, he's going to be a really interesting kind of wide receiver three for me going into the season. But that's the last one I think I'd like to touch on.
You know, I'm very interested to see what's going to happen with the Cardinals offense in general, especially because of the fact that, you know, we talked about Kyler Murray to begin the show. The void at quarterback is still around. It's still there. Maybe that just means we're going to get another year of Jacoby Brissett. And if that happens, I think it could be very fun for Michael Wilson. His rapport with Brissett last year was phenomenal. But we have more time to talk about another player on the Arizona Cardinals on the other side of our commercial break. So please don't go anywhere. This is the Crossing Routes podcast. Yeah, I don't need to say anything. It was a pause.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, you're all good. Right.
Yo, 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 how's it hanging? C.H. Herms from FTN's Crossing Routes podcast here to ask you a question. Have you wanted to get in on some NFL action, but don't live in a state that has a sports book? Well, we have great news. Our newest partner, Novig, is America's number one sports prediction market, offering better odds than sportsbooks in over 35 states. If you're looking to tail some of our plays for the NFL playoffs and all sorts of other sports, new players on Novig can get a free month of an FTN GOAT subscription when they sign up and use promo code FTN with their first purchase. Plus, you'll get 50% off your first purchase up to $25 in Novig cash. All you gotta do is download the Novig app, enter code FTN before making your first purchase of $50 or less, and the discount will automatically apply. Also, your promo code for that free month of an FTN GOAT tier will be in your email inbox before you know it. What a deal! We look forward to having you play on Novig with us this year. Be sure to check it out and use that promo code FTN. Welcome back. This is still the Crossing Routes podcast. This is still Herms. This is still Tyler O. And we are still talking about the largest ripple effects for fantasy football from the various signings thus far in 2026 NFL free agency. And as promised on the other side of the break, there's still a lot to get into with the Arizona Cardinals, particularly in the backfield. This is something we touched on a little bit in last week's episode. Tyler Allgeier joining the Cardinals on a two-year deal and how this could possibly affect that room, but namely Trey Benson. Tyler, tell me more about it.
I mean, as always, rooting for the guy. I hope he does well, but I've just not been a fan of him as a football player since he came out as a prospect. It's never been good. He's had opportunities. It hasn't really worked out. He can't work himself in. I think this is really just kind of stick a fork in him. He's done at this point. Yes, James Conner took a little bit of a pay cut to stay there, but to me, this is an Allgeier-James Conner backfield. Allgeier's not a bad pass catcher. Like, they don't have a clear pass catcher at this point in time, but I think Conner can do it well enough. Allgeier can do it well enough. I never really saw Benson as that. So I would more so look at this Cardinals backfield to be a mix of Conner with Allgeier moving forward. I think this really just moves Trey Benson to the bench as kind of a stash. He's just not that talented. Didn't really work out in the NFL. I think it's time folks really kind of move on and accept that. I mean, this Allgeier signing, stick a fork in him. He's done, man. This is Allgeier and Conner. Just move forward.
RIP all those Trey Benson shares out there in the dynasty streets. Hopefully, and look, if you can find somebody that still believes, go ahead, go for it. But I'm sure that number is dwindling by the day. But very quickly, before we get into the next thing, one of the really funny things that I was thinking about recently, I was going back and looking at some of my running back, you know, college prospect notes just from doing film for different classes back in the day and stuff. Mm-hmm. Tyler Allgeier, I had his comp to James Conner.
I love that.
And I was just like, wait a minute. Oh my gosh, they're just replacing potentially, well, because James Conner is still going to be around for one more season at least. But in the long term, just replacing James Conner with a slightly younger version of James Conner. I thought that was kind of fun. I don't know. I'd forgotten that was something that I put down. But yeah, dude, tough pull for Trey Benson for sure. I am definitely not going to be thinking about him anytime soon ever again. It's pretty much over. I think we can all agree on that. But now we get over to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. What a fun situation this is. Am I right? What an offense. It's going to be great. I hope it's not Aaron Rodgers again, but whether it's him or someone else, these pass catchers, especially with Michael Pittman Jr. now in town, it's going to be kind of messy. I know that this is something you wanted to get into a little bit more. How are you feeling about Michael Pittman now that we've had some time to sort of sit with it and digest it a little?
Not great, man. Not great. I think what you really have to sit here and ask yourself is, realistically, the Pittsburgh Steelers' best case at quarterback really might be Aaron Rodgers. Like, that is, I mean, what other story do we tell ourselves in this case, right? The free agents are pretty much taken care of at this point in time. In terms of quarterback, I mean, what are they going to be able to do? I mean, they're not getting Mendoza. Are they going to take a swing at Ty Simpson? I mean, is this kind of like where we're at? I mean, Ty Simpson or Aaron Rodgers? I mean, I'd probably rather have Aaron Rodgers. At least this year. I mean, going forward, obviously the plan would be Ty Simpson took him there. But it's just like, I'm trying to like put together, like, what is the best case scenario? And the best case scenario is Aaron Rodgers. And for me, DK Metcalf couldn't get it done with being the only really wide receiver in town. There was no one competing with him. They were trotting out Calvin Austin as their second wide receiver. We saw some pretty wild names play wide receiver for the Steelers last year next to Metcalf, especially in three wide receiver sets. So I'm just like looking at the situation, and if Metcalf couldn't get it done, Pittman's not going to get it done with Metcalf on the field. Presumably, I would love to see them use Freiermuth more, who's an underrated tight end in the NFL. So I just kind of look at the pieces here. I'm like, there's just not enough meat on the bone. Yes, the Steelers could be worse and pass the ball more. A lot of things are in question here as we kind of figure out what this kind of new look of the Steelers is going to be. But to me, Pittman is just not a player for fantasy that I want any part of with this trade and what things are probably going to be looking like here. Maybe better in real life, whatever. But, man, it's tough for me to build a strong case for wanting Michael Pittman on my fantasy teams.
It is a little tough. I have a ton of my own personal sort of, quote, biased thoughts as somebody who's rooted for the Steelers for a long time. But if I'm going to have any sort of enthusiasm, it would be stemming from the fact that at least they hired Mike McCarthy. At least they brought in somebody who can bring a modern NFL offense to the table. Because I think the analogy that I'd use when talking about that hire is that it's not the most inspiring thing that Pittsburgh could have done moving on from Mike Tomlin, but at least they updated their operating system on their computer to something newer than like Windows 95, because they were running some Windows 95 ass offenses for a few years there, and that was kind of gross. So from that perspective, like, I do think it will be better, because I think, kind of like you had talked about, they'll probably pass more. At least there will be that. But beyond that, how effective it's going to be, especially if it's coming from Aaron Rodgers, I don't know, man. But if I had to pick between the two, I guess I'm a little bit more worried about DK Metcalf than Pittman, because I do think Pittman is a little bit better in terms of the diversity of the routes that he can offer. Maybe he does get a little bit more possession style work, but neither one of them are going to be particularly great. Trusting any of these pass catchers is not going to be super great. But before we transition away from the Steelers, one of the things we talked about last year, specifically with DK Metcalf, was the fact that his ADP was low enough and the upside was slightly high enough that it was still worth drafting him somewhere in like the early 30s or so. Is there a price point for Michael Pittman Jr. with the possibility that he is going to be the, quote, lead receiver on this team that you would feel comfortable taking that stab?
I mean, I think for me, like, you know, eighth, ninth round when you're just taking stabs, like, I'd probably take him in best ball. But like in terms of like managed teams, I don't necessarily see an upside here where I want to get him on my team. Yeah, if he goes late enough, I could like add him, but that's usually when I want to add like running back or something like that, man. So I've not looked enough into what ADP is or what I think it's going to be at this point in time. I'm sure there's best ball ADP we could be pulling from right now, but the name is just, I'm not interested right now. It just doesn't seem like I can build any sort of upside case. So I'm out right now. Things could change, sure, but I'm out for now.
No, definitely fair. Still a lot of offseason left to unfold, but let's keep it with the pass catchers and turn our attention back to the Washington Commanders, because there was another loser that you wanted to hit that I definitely agree with. I think that the signing of Chig Okonkwo at tight end, I mean, I'm just thrilled about that by itself. We could have our own conversation about that separately, but it does kind of spell a very premature end for whatever hope Ben Sinnott had. I know he didn't get out on the field a lot over the first couple of years of his career, but people could make the excuse of like, oh, well, they had Zach Ertz. And even though Zach Ertz is old, he was a reliable veteran. We knew that he was very, very good when he was healthy and out there. But with Zach Ertz out of the equation, the first thing the Commanders do is go out and sign a different tight end. Do you have any hope for Ben Sinnott at all at this point? Should you even bother sending like a fourth round rookie pick just to take a flyer anymore? Or do you think you can just send him off to Dumpsville?
I don't know if I'm dropping him, but he's pretty much Dumpsville at this point in time. I mean, he was a second round pick, but he's done absolutely nothing. He can't work his way on the field. If a second round pick who gets the benefit of the doubt in all this time can't work their way on the field, like, I have serious concerns. And then presumably it was going to be his time. Chico Cuoco gets a signing. I mean, geez, maybe he should just go play some fullback at this point in time. You know, Chig's been good, right? I think for me, he's a little underrated. The guy's essentially over the last 3 years, he's been so consistent. He's between like 70 and 80 targets, catches, you know, 55-ish balls every single season. And he's been hamstrung a bit by what's been trotted out on the Titans offense, if we're being completely honest. And, you know, his yards per, you know, yards per attempt is like, his other kind of metrics are fine. He looks good with the ball in his hands. Yes, he hasn't scored a lot of touchdowns, but no one on the Titans has been scoring touchdowns through the air for a little while here. So for me, I'm excited. I think there's a world when, you know, he's a late round stab that could turn into something. Jane Daniels continues to progress. He plays well. There's not a lot of other passing options right now, I believe, on the Commanders outside of Terry. That could change, sure, but I think he's going to be the starter here. And if this offense can rebound from a, you know, very poor injury infested 2025, now could he sneak in as a top 10, top 12 tight end? I don't think it's out of the question, Herms.
I certainly think it's pretty possible too. Like, they're definitely going to have to add some sort of secondary receiver to go opposite McLaurin at some point, but unless it's a massive name, like, let's say they don't take Jeremiah Love at 7. Maybe they go the route of Carnell Tate from Ohio State or one of these other really big pass catchers. It could be a different conversation at that point. But if Chig Okonkwo survives the NFL draft and is still in a position to at least be somewhat prominently featured, I am probably going to be one of those people that ranks him, albeit at the very back end, but still inside of the top 12. He is a player that I've liked for a very long time. I think he's a fun winner. And Ben Sinnott, best of luck to you. Hey, at least you're still in the NFL. At least you're still a professional football player. Let's living your checks. Dream.
Get your checks. Get your checks.
Could be a lot worse for him. But one more quick situation I wanted to get in before turning it over to you for any final thoughts you have. We talked a little bit about the Buccaneers signing Kenneth Gainwell in last week's episode. We didn't touch on it too much, but I decided to dig in a little bit more and kind of think more about what the possible fallout could be from that. And I really think Kenneth Gainwell is going to be a bigger problem in Tampa than maybe people are initially giving it credit. Because like I was saying in the article that I came out with on the site last week, I dug into all the free agent contract history. I looked at running backs. And if you hit about $7 million in average annual value, the odds of you then turning around to become a fantasy viable running back are quite high. Unless you get hurt or something, obviously. Anything can happen as far as, you know, health stuff goes. But Gainwell got the bag, and he got the bag from a team that recently hired Zach Robinson to be the new offensive coordinator coming over from the Atlanta Falcons. I don't want to do too much in the way of just copy pasting those results over, because obviously that was a lot of stuff with Bijan Robinson as the running back there in his offense, but they still threw the ball to the running back a lot. And that's not something that Bucky Irving has always been really known for. In his rookie season, he averaged a little under 3 targets per game. And I did a little bit of math. In 10 games last year, he saw a slight uptick to 3.5 targets per game, but it's not so much that this is something that we would call a core feature of his skill set. And one of the things we were talking about before we started recording is the fact that Sean Tucker also still around. Dude's kind of a menace in the goal line area. How do we feel about Bucky Irving now, dude? Like, are you with me that this Gainwell signing is actually a bigger deal than people are making it out to be? And with that in mind, does Bucky Irving still warrant being drafted as a top 12 running back? Or is he maybe going to fall out of that range for you?
I mean, he's probably fallen out of that range. I mean, frankly, he was already falling out of that range last year for me. I was already a little bit concerned with kind of how, you know, he runs his role. But the way I look at it now is you have Gainwell, who's a pass catching and pass blocking specialist. And then they got Sean Tucker. Presumably he'll be back. I think he's got some of them special, like kind of down on what it is. But basically, if someone else tries to sign Sean Tucker, someone else can match. And it's like, you know, amount of money that I don't think it's going to happen. So essentially, where we're at here is Sean Tucker, maybe get some goal line looks, and then you got Gainwell with the passing looks. What does that leave Bucky Irving? Now, it doesn't mean that I only think Bucky Irving is going to be used on early downs between the tackles, but you have Sean Tucker, who's likely going to get some run and be used around the goal line, and Gainwell, who's a pass catcher, and that's the stuff that we want for running back. So I don't know if I'm gonna have Bucky Irvin in my, you know, as we settle in, is he gonna fall in the top 12 for me? I'm not absolutely certain about that. So yeah, I definitely think a little bit of a loser here would make some sense with them retaining Tucker and then them going out and getting Gainwell.
Are there any other winners and or losers in terms of ripple effects for fantasy that you want to touch on before we get out of here? The floor is yours.
I mean, we have already kind of touched on it, but I mean, it's really just JJ McCarthy at this point in time. I think it's just over. Maybe he'll find some time as a backup. It's too late to sell him. I don't think there's any type of, you know, them signing Kyler to motivate JJM or, hey, JJM's still going to be the future. I think Kyler sticks around, man. JJM's career as a starter is just over. We need to look ourselves in the mirror and just accept the fact that this is just not happening. You can't count on him as a starter going forward. I saw it earlier than most, but it's time that people just come to terms with reality. And that's how I'll end it.
Yeah, just a couple numbers to throw at people before we get out. Out of 38 qualified quarterbacks in our NFL Stats Hub last year, JJ McCarthy, 36th in EPA per dropback, the third worst turnover-worthy throw rate at 4.5%, and the fourth worst accuracy rating at 70.5%. It's gross. He could still win the job. Maybe Kyler Murray doesn't emerge victorious, and who knows? The meme opportunities for call of backup duty, I think, would be absolutely hilarious. So I'm kind of rooting for it from the meme standpoint. But yeah, whatever enthusiasm you had for JJ McCarthy, it's got to be gone at this point. Luckily, guys who get picked super high in the NFL draft usually get at least one more opportunity somewhere else. It's possible it could happen for him, but I just don't know if it's going to be here in Minnesota for the one that they call nine. But that brings us to the end of our episode this week. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Be sure to check out all of the awesome stuff that we have going on at ftnfantasy.com. Tons of great articles. And it's not just fantasy football stuff. We have all sorts of things. Now that we're into fantasy baseball season, if you are going to be drafting one of your teams, go check out all of the different draft kit options we have. Sign up for some of those tools. Get in the action. Be part of it. And be sure to come back next week when we have a new episode of the Crossing Routes podcast. For Tyler O, my name is Herms, and we will catch you all another time. Adios! Think of better.